Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
I think that term most recently has been used in connection with people who are identified with the alt-right movement and things of that type of thing. I have absolutely no associations whatsoever with any kind of extremist organizations.
If nobody's ever willing to take action, then I guess we just say striking's legal in Arizona, so legislature passed a law that says public servants can strike.
It's time to move forward, and I want to move forward. I want to work with the teachers in the coming years, and I'm more focused on what's next than what's happened in the past.
And with us to talk about whether teachers who walked out of class should be punished, David Stringer's apology at Lolo's, and more, former Arizona Corporation Commission Chair Chris Mays and Sam Richard of Creosote Partners. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be here.
Thanks,
so,
Steve.
Chris, a topic I did not mention was Justice Anthony Kennedy deciding to retire. General impact of that. I mean, he is an 81-year-old man, and for some on the progressive side, they've been disappointed by some of his decisions anyway, in recent days at least.
Yeah, actually, for the last year, he's sort of returned to his conservative roots. And though he sort of cultivated this notion that he was a centrist judge, and he certainly was in some very key cases, I just ranked, I think, the 10th most conservative justice in U.S. Supreme Court history. So he actually, was a conservative. But, he was the swing vote on, gay marriage, on abortion in many instances, in other high-profile cases. And so he will be very missed from that standpoint. And all you have to do is look at how much progressives and a lot of centrists are gearing up for the Supreme Court battle over who will replace him to see how key he was.
Yeah, Sam, this has major implications, obviously.
Definitely. Implications across the country, but I think just to localize it here in Arizona, one of the things that people are talking a lot about is the Roe v. Wade decision and the fact that abortion has been legal for 40 years. And one of the biggest considerations right here is that we can't have our granddaughters and our daughters, frankly, to live in a world that's going to be different than the one that preceded it by 40 years. And if that protection goes away at the federal level, Arizona is among a handful of states where abortion is illegal currently under our statute. So this is an issue that is very pressing for Arizonans.
Sam, there had been some talk right around the time that Justice Kennedy announced his retirement that Jeff Flake, Arizona's junior senator, might be in the spotlight a little bit because he could potentially look to block a nominee or have harsh questions for a nominee. He had talked a little earlier about potentially holding up lower court nominees over the issue of tariffs. It seems, though, now that he is sort of moved off to the side. He says he's not going to hold up a nomination over that issue anyway. Is it fair to say that maybe the spotlight is on other members of the GOP caucus in the Senate now and not Jeff Flake?
I think that's definitely fair to say. And while it was extremely disappointing that Senator Flake took that course of action, it was not at all surprising. I think that this is a movie that we've seen before where he has the opportunity to really make an important stance. This is something, where Merrick Garland was denied a full hearing within, almost nearly a year before the election. Now we're within about 130 days, I believe the right number is. So it's definitely disappointing. But I think to your point, that now the conversation shifts to senators like Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, who have already kind of made hints that they're going to be looking at this issue from a Roe lens.
Yeah, and I think for sure the spotlight will be on Murkowski, Collins, maybe a few others, certainly even the Democratic members of the Senate who are under tremendous pressure, like Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota, Manchin from West Virginia. These senators who are under tremendous electoral pressure, Trump's going to fly into their states and say, "Hey, what are you going to do on this pick?" So I think I would watch them as well. This is going to be so climactic. This is going to be just like the healthcare vote, where it's going to come down to one or two people probably. actually.
Well, Chris, you and Sam both referenced some female senators, and I wonder if there's pressure to have a female Supreme Court justice nominee here, and if so, does that put pressure on some of these people who may be on the bubble to say, I really can't vote against a woman because, you know, this is good?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. Probably if Trump were smart, he would do that. It doesn't look like his, I wouldn't say usually is, so I'm not looking for that to happen. I think when you look at his short list and the list that he was picking from when he picked Gorsuch, it looks like those are all men, and it looks like there's two or three men, one from Pennsylvania, one from Alabama, who are, or Mike Lee from
Utah. Not Roy Moore.
Not Roy Moore, but one from Alabama, who are sort of the front runners. Mike Lee from the senator from Utah. Yeah, so that's what I think will come out of this, but we'll see.
And, you know, the Roe decision is by far the only decision that's at stake here. Justice Kennedy was instrumental in protecting the Affordable Care Act and also in conversations around marriage equality and just equality in general for the LGBT community. So I think that there's a lot of issues that are at stake here. And I think that every U.S. senator, every candidate for U.S. Senate should be asked about this question. And I think that many voters will be looking very closely at how they answer.
Yeah, this court is moving right. When you start talking about John Roberts as your centrist swing vote, you know it's a different world.
Do either of you think that there's a chance that we could return to the days where a Supreme Court justice nominee could get 60, 65, 70 votes, bipartisan votes? Like, has the ship totally sailed on that?
I mean, I think that pendulums always swing. I would definitely say that ship is out to sea right now. I think it has an opportunity to come back to port, but I think that this confirmation hearing will not be that time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I just don't see how we can get to that point where when we can't even agree that justice selections nominees ought to be heard. You know, and I think there was so much bad blood spilt over and so much, such a poisonous situation that developed over what happened with Merrick Garland when Mitch McConnell and the Republicans refused to even hear that, that we're very far from that world at this point.
And what's ironic about Garland is maybe he would have been those based on what senators at least said
right.
In private. He might have been one who could have bridged the gap a bit. Let's go more local. Governor Ducey is saying that he doesn't want to punish teachers who walked out during Red for Ed. Diane Douglas isn't so sure. It's not surprising to hear the two of them not in lockstep with each other. But Sam, what do you make of that? I mean, the governor is trying to be a little bit more middle of the road on this one. Diane Douglas is not, or maybe she's just confused. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that there are quite a few factors at play. But I think probably more than anything are the dynamics of the race that each of them respectively care most about. Diane Douglas has a very contentious primary on her hands in which the Republican establishment has chosen another horse in the race. So she needs to make a splash in a big way, and this is one way to do that. Governor Ducey, on the other hand, is going to handily win his primary against Ken Bennett, but he has a very challenging general election up ahead of him, and he knows that he dropped the ball related to the Red for Ed movement, related to really education funding in general. And, you know, despite what the hashtags and headlines say, I think Arizona voters know that this governor is not the education governor. So he's looking to the general election, whereas Diane Douglas is looking to the primary.
Yeah, and this was the last thing that Governor Ducey needed or wanted to have happen, which was Diane Douglas come out and say, let's punish teachers. I mean, come on. For goodness sake, this is sort of the most ridiculous possible position that a superintendent of public instruction could take. And, you know, obviously further inflames a major part of the electorate that's already, you know, activated and already working and is out collecting signatures for their own ballot initiative. And, you know, this issue is already depressing Ducey's numbers. His recent polling numbers were not great. And I think this issue, education, had a lot to do with that.
Even I think if you look logistically at that, like how exactly would you punish teachers? I mean, it seems difficult to suspend them, for example. We have a teacher shortage. If you're going to take teachers out of the classroom further, many of them don't really make enough to warrant fining them. I mean, you're taking a significant percentage of their paycheck. Like, logistically, how would that even work? What are some of the options that they maybe even could have considered to punish teachers who walked out?
Well, it wouldn't work. There are no options. It's, you know, you would have a rebellion of parents like me on your hands who say, are you kidding me? This is not going to happen. And so, and you know, I don't know that they even really had the authority to do this. So it was ridiculous. I think Sam's right that it was just, you know, I think it was a rhetorical splash that she was trying to make. But I think that it just further compounds the problem Republicans are going to have this fall.
Definitely. And I think, you know, one of the things that was talked about was maybe removing certifications of any teachers that left the classroom. But I think the irony of that, and this was an open question, but the irony of that is that the governor and the Republican-led legislature had a bill a couple of years ago that actually said that you don't need to be certified to be a teacher. So I think that there's a lot of dynamics at play. And at the end of the day, this was for the headline.
Sam, does this become a campaign issue, do you think, for either Democrats or even maybe in some of the primaries?
Oh, I think that it's a present tense. I think it is a campaign issue. And
the idea of potentially punishing teachers.
Definitely.
Not the rest of it obviously is. But
yes. Yeah. I mean, I think as soon as the State Board of Education agenda went up online, the reverberations of that went on through the message boards and through the social media talking groups. And teachers knew that. And that is why the State Board of Education punted on the issue, because they didn't want to rebellion on their hands during their meeting.
And yeah. Chris, finally, before the break, pardon me, Bob Robb's column this morning talked about the possibility of clarifying whether public workers should be able to strike, because that was something that came up. Is there really a law in Arizona against that? Bob's conservative. His choice is, well, let's clarify this and make it so maybe public workers can't strike. What's your take on that?
Well, again, my take is it would be viewed by teachers as an affront. It would be viewed as teachers as an insult upon insult. So, you know, perhaps that they want to go down that road, but I think it would be a mistake politically if they did. I think it's sort of a technicality. Why would you go down that road?
Yeah, and Sam, I'm not sure it would be an issue, especially not this time, because many people are expecting or at least planning to see some sort of shift because of the number of teachers who are running, the fact there are so many education issues related on the ballot. So it wouldn't be this cycle, but is that something you could see the conservatives sort of getting their haunches up on?
I mean, I definitely think that that's part of the zeitgeist, to use a 25-cent word. But I really do think that after the Janus decision earlier this week, that was a big blow to
unions,
public
right?
sector unions.
Yeah.
I think that it's probably on the minds of a lot of conservative talking heads. But I think at the end of the day, this is going to come down to whether or not are we protecting workers or are we protecting management. And I think that there are important protections for workers, even in a right-to-work state like Arizona, and walking off the job should remain one of them.
That's Sam Richard. Also here is Chris Mays with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. It is the NewsCap here on KJZ. Sees the show. We'll return after this. Thanks for listening to the show here on 91.5 KJZZ in Phoenix with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. With us are Chris Mays, former Arizona Corporation Commission Chair, and Sam Richard of Creosote Partners. Now, Chris, just to let listeners in, we're going to pull back the curtain a bit. You're from Prescott. You're not feeling great about David Stringer. I presume not him and not the chicken and waffles where he made his apology.
Yeah, no. I am a native Prescottonian. I'll be leaving here when we're done to go home for the 4th of July weekend. And I am appalled, honestly, at what David Stringer said at the Republican meeting that he attended. Not surprised, frankly, because, you know, I'm also a Republican and I've been in a lot of these meetings. And I think this sort of white nationalist strain has been growing, unfortunately, in my party. Maybe white nationalist is a little too strong of a word, but it's being bandied about. Certainly this notion that immigrants and people of Hispanic descent are overtaking our schools and overtaking our society is growing in the Republican Party. It's dangerous. It's going to destroy our party, my party, if it continues. And David Stringer, let me be clear, does not represent Yavapai County, does not represent me, my family, and the vast majority of the people of Prescott. It's just disgusting. And I think that you saw that in the pretty quick, relatively quick reaction of the governor and the chairman of the party to say, look, this guy's got to go. But, you know, I don't know that that necessarily means he's going to lose his next election.
And I don't have much to add to what Chris said, I think. And, of course, just hearing from a native Prescottonian, I think, is important in this race. But I think that the shameful attempt at an apology in air quotes here, there was no attempt at Lolo's to settle the score or apologize. There was no remorse at all. And that was, frankly, disappointing.
Hey, Chris, what do you make of that quote-unquote apology, in which he didn't really say he was sorry and didn't really apologize to anybody? It was one of those, I apologize if I offended you.
Right, it was if you happen to have been offended, then I'm sorry you were offended. I mean, it's just silly and ridiculous, of course. But I think it tells you a lot, Mark, about where he actually is on these issues and where he is coming from within the Republican Party. And I think that this may have existed within my party for maybe 20 years, maybe longer, but it has been emboldened by Donald Trump. This is the kind of language that Trump uses. I mean, Trump talked about the immigrant children on the border being separated from their parents in the same breath that he talked about an infestation. I mean, let's be clear. This is coming from the same place.
And that would be the one thing that I would add. I mean, I think that definitely it was the right move from the governor and other legislative leaders to quickly repudiate Stringer's comments and his actions. But I think that it's obvious that we're picking and choosing who we're repudiating. And I think that, you know, if that logic continues forward to, the president's actions and many members of his cabinet to a handful of folks here in Arizona that are in elected office, I think that there'd be probably a lot more strong words from folks in power.
And I would just add, you know, if the Republican Party is serious about rooting this out, then they need to not just call for him to resign. You know, I haven't heard much from the governor, and I haven't heard much from the chairman, Jonathan Lyons, since this happened. Haven't heard anything from the chambers recently. You know, are they going to spend money? Are they going to spend time? Are they going to campaign against this guy? Are they just going to leave it with that initial repudiation? If they're serious and they want to, you know, a party that can win going forward and that's respectable going forward, they have to do more.
And Sam, there's certainly the possibility of Stringer being reelected. Now, someone who is going up for reelection after he was kicked out by his fellow House members, Don Shooter, will be on the ballot, which calls into question to some extent. Some people think Arizona's residency requirements are odd, but we can move past that. What is the impact of Don Shooter being on the ballot and potentially back in the legislature?
I frankly think it's a travesty. I think that every candidate for the state Senate should be asked if they're going to refuse to sit with a chamber that includes Don Shooter that their House colleagues had expelled. And I think, in fact, if J.D. Mesnard, current Speaker of the House, who's running for the state Senate, hasn't already drafted a SCR1 that is the same language from the House, he and his staff should probably work on that immediately. I think, you know, just because it's legal doesn't mean that it's right. And to your point about our loose residency restrictions here in Arizona, I am very disappointed that he thought that it was a wise decision to continue his political life. And I think that everyone on the ballot should condemn his choice.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable, and I think again, it only helps Democrats. You know, they are, I think, well poised to potentially take back the state Senate. Having issues like this to campaign on and to point to and say, look at what this is the quality of the candidates Republicans are putting up: David Stringer, Don Shooter, you know, Stringer and Shooter. You know, this is what they're offering. Come on, let's do something different this year. There will be a blue wave. This only feeds into, I think, a dynamic that is headed toward the Republican Party.
Is there enough understanding, sort of, in the general voting population of who these people are. I mean, people might have heard Shooter. Oh, he was the guy who got kicked out, right? But like, even if they maybe see his name on the ballot, do they put it together to the extent that they're going to say, yes, I don't want to vote for him? And if is somebody from a different district going to say, oh, yes, okay, so this guy over in Yuma is on the GOP primary ballot, so that means I shouldn't vote for these GOP primary candidates or GOP general election candidates in Mesa or Yavapai County?
I think that that's a very great question, but I would say two things. One, I think that you know, we have more people paying attention to the minutiae of politics today than we ever have before. And second, I want to reiterate one of the things that Chris said about if the party is serious about rooting this out, they need to invest in educating their voters what other options are, what the alternatives are. If they let people like Stringer and Shooter continue to exist and fall by, you know, these lines like, well, let the voters decide in the primary, I think, frankly, that's a huge disappointment. And so if they're serious, the parties should educate voters on other alternatives.
Yeah, I agree. And it would be also a test for the Democratic Party to see whether they can muster the money and quality candidates to go up against these guys in some of these very Republican areas. Place like Yavapai County, I don't know if the blue wave's going to be enough to defeat whoever the Republican nominee is. And in that case, it's probably going to be the Stringer against the Republican, the other Republican candidate.
Well, in the Shooter primary, he is going up against an incumbent, granted somebody who was not there for the full session, not somebody who was elected, somebody who was appointed when Steve Montenegro left to run for Congress. Do either of you think Shooter will win that primary?
I hope that we don't have to answer that question. Frankly, I mean, I think it's still my firm belief that he shouldn't be on the ballot, even though he is allowed to per the Supreme Court. I think that he should willingly step aside. And if he doesn't do that, party leaders should force him to do that. But I think to your earlier question about whether or not this is a difficult thing for voters to find out, I think that it's a real possibility that he could win the primary just on name ID alone. And I think that's where my call for other people running for the state Senate comes through, that they should not allow him to make it to the general.
What do you think, Chris?
You know, I would agree with that. I think that it is possible. I mean, name ID plays heavily into this. That being said, this is a pretty egregious situation. You're talking about a situation where a legislator was credibly accused by his own body of sexually harassing, seven women, including, you know, the publisher of the Arizona Republic, legislators, lobbyists. It's absolutely grotesque things, and so it's up to the people of this district to determine the fate of the situation.
Chris, let's close on a lighter note in our last minute or so.
Okay.
Now, I'm someone who has always thought Jeff Flake's future was in television. Now, apparently he's taking meetings with MSNBC and CNN. We saw him basically try for Survivor by having his shirt off on an island. is he going to end up on TV once he leaves the Senate?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, and I think that's – I actually think it's a brilliant stroke on his part to move in that direction. I mean, I think that he has become – a pretty important voice of moderation. So I think it's smart, because if he does want to run for president in 2 years, he keeps his name ID and his voice out there.
Sam, does he do it? And if so, does he continue to criticize the president constantly?
I think that it's likely that it happens. I think that cable news is a great place for Senator Flake, because that's probably his rhetoric is the only thing that really I think carries weight. And I think, but beyond that, you know, we were talking earlier in this conversation about all the things that are going to happen with Supreme Court nominations and other pieces. And I think, frankly, just very disappointed that our junior senator has a big case of senioritis. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a little Friday joke for you. But I think that really it is disappointing that he's taken this course.
That is Sam Richard of Creosote Partners. We're also joined by former Arizona Corporation Commission Chair Chris Mays. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at the show@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.